Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Tom Curran's Pete, 3-8 Stock Podcast. Phil Perry alongside. We have another minicamp practice. We're going to break it on down because a lot went on out there. We got discussion of what we saw, the Mac Cam competition heating up. How did Cam deal with fewer reps today? Also, we're going to get into a little bit of a deep dive on Stephon Gilmore and what his minicamp holdout means. And finally, is the door shut, cracked, or wide open for Mac Jones? All that and more on this Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast. All right, Phil, COVID protocols mean it's just one of us is out there still, and it was you. And I don't mind that because I love the way you chronicle. What did you see? And let's just dive right into the quarterbacks, Cam and Mac.
So I felt like today was a day where the Patriots really started to fast track Mac Jones. I think they just want to try to get him ready as quickly as possible. We saw that just based on the number of reps that he got today, Tom. So I'll read off to you. In the first competitive 7-on-7 period, Mac Jones got 6 reps. Cam Newton got 2. In the first competitive 11-on-11 period, Mac Jones got 7 reps. Newton got 3. So by the end of the practice, when you ran up the tally, Newton basically had 13 competitive attempts. He completed 6. He had 4 other snaps where he was sacked. Jones had 23 competitive attempts with a sack mixed in there and a couple of interceptions. So while it wasn't a great day for Mac Jones, Tom, they clearly are upping his workload.
How did Cam deal with his reduced workload? I know that via Twitter, you mentioned a couple times that he was a little slow going from drill to drill and not the usual bounce in his happy step.
Right. And it's hard for us to really confirm what it was that was bothering him, if there was anything bothering him, but he's always, Tom, been a guy we know that has worn his heart on his sleeve. And so after that first competitive 11-on-11 period, the one where Newton got 3 reps and then Mac Jones got 7, he walked pretty slowly all the way to the next quarterback drill. And you contrast that with the usual energy that we see from Cam Newton. And that stood out, head down at times. You know, later in the practice, when other quarterbacks were taking their competitive reps, whether it was Mac Jones or Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer didn't get any today. Hands on his hips, standing by himself. Again, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's done that consistently throughout the course of his career. So it's hard not to watch Cam Newton. And we don't know if he's upset about a bad play, if he's upset about the number of reps, if he feels like he's getting a proper chance to compete for his job. But I think all of those things could be in play because, as we've mentioned on the podcast before, he's kind of hanging by a thread in terms of his NFL career here. And today was clearly a day where they wanted to get Mac Jones as much work as possible.
Great thing about it is we did have access to Cam Newton today. He was on a Zoom call. And after that practice, there was a long layoff in between the end of practice and some of the other players' Zoom calls and Cam's. He took a shower. He spruced up. He came out to talk to us. And I was like, is it happening? Are we going to be starting to see the worm turn a little bit? Cam's getting pushed. He's seeing more reps go to Mac Jones. Are we going to see a disconsolate, deflated, half-irked Cam Newton gets in front of the Zoom call, and he is none of the above. Here's a few snips from Cam's session with us. First one up on whether or not he's ready for a competition.
Do you feel like you have something to prove, basically, going into, you know, this year, more so than usual?
Double duh. Like, yeah. I mean, it's only 32 guys in the world that could say that they're a starting quarterback in this league. And, you know, I'm not going to get too personal and I'm not going to get, you know, too where I have a job and responsibility to myself, to hold myself to a standard that I know I have to play at. And it's going to come with proper preparation. And that's what it's coming down to. It's going to come down to comfort of understanding the system. My faults, my bads, I'm going to get them next time. Those are slowly but surely being flushed out of my vernacular. And just the expectations of getting back to the standard of the Patriot way.
All right, so there's your double duh response. Here is Cam on Mac Jones. He is still calling him Mac and Cheese, and it's going to be tough if Mac and Cheese is starting over him. But here he is talking about his impressions of the quiet and sponge-like Mac Jones.
How much do you like Mac and Cheese?
Mac and Cheese, he's pretty cool, man. He's quiet. You know, and I think he's trying to figure everybody out. And, you know, I've been there before. You know, I've been a rookie, and I've been a first round pick where it's just like so much is asked about, you know, from you, you know, coming from a situation where, you know, you have a lot of people that are your peers, you know, your same age group. And now, you know, what is Mac? What, 21, 22? I'm 32. You know, and Hoy's 35, 36, you know, so it's like, it's tough. So he's doing a great job with, you know, being everything as advertised, you know, from the leadership's perspective. You know, he's holding himself accountable, and that's all you can ask from a young player.
Finally, here is Cam talking about the decision by the Patriots to draft Mac Jones. Jarrett Stidham said it kind of fired him up. Did it fire up Cam?
Absolutely not. You know, it didn't make me feel any type of way, because he was the right pick, you know what I'm saying, in my opinion. And, you know, he was the best player available, and that's what the NFL draft is for. As far as, you know, having any chip on the shoulder, like, I mean, stating the obvious, I don't need too much to get myself going, let alone, you know, that happening. And it's no disrespect to Mac. It's no disrespect to, you know, Bill and his decision. I support it 110%, because there you still have to do what's right for the organization for the long haul. So, you know, like I said, I will reiterate, it's like we all have to make each other better, and it starts with ourselves and holding ourselves to a daily standard. And, you know, Josh said it best, you know, this offseason is about getting back to a championship standard, and from meeting time to when you check in, when you clock out, you know, understanding what you're supposed to do on top of the other 10 people that you're out there with, and just putting everybody at ease. So, you know, no matter who's out there, you know, we're going to push each other to get better. And that's what we're expected to do.
Phil, I mean, if this isn't soft toss, it's T-ball. He is absolutely hammering every one of these answers out of the park. And I know that many people might be of a mind that Cam says what's expeditious for Cam. I don't give a shit. He is so open, introspective, self-effacing, and honest in these, that I don't think, I just can't bring myself to not believe him.
No, and I think it's definitely hard to root against the guy based on what we hear from him in those settings. And I agree with him in that he says nothing's going to be given to anybody here. That to me raised my eyebrows a little bit, because it's acknowledging that there is a competition afoot here. And it's pretty clear to see it when we're watching practice right now, even though this is not what Bill Belichick would call a competitive camp. It's pretty clear they're going to try to give Mac Jones a chance here. And I would say it's pretty clear to Cam Newton as well. And it should be, based on a lot of things, not just what we're seeing in practice, based on contracts, based on where they drafted Mac Jones. So he's basically just telling us what we already know, Tom, but I think getting that perspective from the guy who's in the middle of it carries a lot of weight.
Yeah, 100%. And it's we are going to, and I know that you wanted to squeeze in a question about how to interpret him on the field, and he answers everything. So I'm sure he would have answered that. And I was going to ask him a question about, are you ready for outside scrutiny by the media and the fans and a steady diet of who's ahead? And is Cam about to lose his job? Because he's never really had that, ever, last year included. How does he feel about us doing the daily Cam Mac watch, Mac Cam watch? Because it's coming. And this is something I talked about too, Phil, with this heightened workload. Last week when I wrote about the Hoyer reps that were excessive, it seemed, during the last OTA. I felt that that was probably an effort by the Patriots to say, Mac, watch how he does this. He's been here for 13 years. Just shut up and watch and then see how you do. And then I think the first 2 days of this week with Hoyer completely on the sidelines watching and Mac Jones taking all the reps that he is, the Patriots do want him to be up to speed as quickly as possible so that there is a competition when the end of July rolls around.
And I would say too,
go ahead, bud. Yeah.
I would just say, I would add, because, you know, we give out the, whatever, the competitive snap tally and the completions and the intercepts and the picks and all that. And he did throw two interceptions today, but I would say he looks like the better quarterback right now, based on the last 2 days of practice. It's in part because of the accuracy. I would say it's in part because the ball comes out on time. And that's something that I continue to come back to every time I watch Mac Jones, is that these plays are going off on schedule. And that's unusual from my experience watching young quarterbacks in this offense. You have a lot of reps typically where there's hold, 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 pat, 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 throw it away, tuck and run. You do get that occasionally still with Mac Jones, but it's not nearly with the regularity that you would see it with another young quarterback. And so
Jimmy Garoppolo was absolutely friggin' glacial in his first camp, especially in the first 2 weeks, glacial with his decision-making. So you're right.
I would say Jacoby Brissett, that extended into his second year. And so like those things would lead me to believe, given all of the different eyeballs, Tom, and they've got video cameras on these guys at, you know, from every angle, whether it's just a fundamental mechanical drill or it's a team period, they're watching this. And I think that sort of stuff would have to impress Josh McDaniels.
How did the coaching staff operate around Mac Jones today? Were there a lot of people with him, a few people? What was going on there?
He still gets a lot of time with Josh McDaniels. And I did make note of one point early in the practice where they're just going through the walkthrough portion of practice that we're not allowed to tape because they are going through real plays. It's before they even stretch, though. And Mac Jones' last throw was an overthrow down the field. Everybody's going at a walking pace almost. And Josh McDaniels is hammering him, getting after him as he's walking over to go stretch. The practice has barely started. And he did something that McDaniels didn't like. And McDaniels was coaching him pretty hard. And that, I think, again, is another indication of they're trying to give him a lot at once, but they're also expecting a lot from him. And that they feel too, I've talked about some people with the team recently about this. They care about being able to coach players hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the pre-draft process for them. It's part of bringing out the most in all of these guys, especially the young guys. And I think that's one of the added benefits of getting these guys from Alabama that had success there under Nick Saban. They're used to that. And not every player is used to that. And I think we saw an example of that today. Again, another day where he's spending a lot of time with Josh McDaniels to try to get things going for him.
What will also be interesting when you look at the group dynamic is making sure that while he is being coached hard and ridden, it's not done to a point where it loses the respect of the guys on the offense with him. I mean, it's a very, what are you doing? What the bleep are you doing? And at some point, you know, the receivers will be like, does he know what he's doing? So it's a dance. It's a complete dance, and how Mac Jones responds to it and how often his chin goes down because of it is going to be instructive. And how was Cam? I know the answer, but I want you to illustrate it for folks. How did Cam do after his period of head hanging when he got the next reps?
So the next competitive team period was a 7-on-7 period. And it looked like Cam Newton said, all right, here it goes. And we're just going to let this thing loose because he made three deep attempts down the field. And these could have been scripted. This could have been a shot play period for all I know. And all three though were off the mark. And it's not Cam Newton's game. The first was overthrown, incomplete, the set in that into coverage. Jalen Mills got his hands on it. Pretty good day from Jalen Mills. Second was overthrown to a very open Hunter Henry, which is kind of, I would say, a throw that you have to make. And then the third throw was high to Kendrick Bourne, also deep down the field, off Bourne's hands and intercepted by Kyle Duggar. I wouldn't call it a drop because it would have been a pretty impressive catch. He did complete his next three throws. Cam Newton did. So good for him on bouncing back. But those three deep attempts, it felt like he was looking to come back with a splash, and it didn't work out for him.
All right. We'll have one more mini camp practice tomorrow. And we will continue over the next month, I'm sure, to keep ourselves abreast of the situation with Cam and Mac and get ready for what's going to be a fascinating camp with that position. What's also going to be interesting to watch develop over the next 5 to 6 weeks. Yeah, 5 to 6 weeks will be what happens with Stephon Gilmore. Here was Bill Belichick this morning confirming that Gilmore is not coming to this 3-day minicamp.
Yeah, we don't, I don't expect them to be here. And we'll just focus on the guys that are here.
There's Bill. Here's Phil asking Devin McCourty about Gil Lelock.
You just mentioned, building a foundation at this point in the year. Without Stephon Gilmore, what do you guys lose in terms of being able to build that foundation? And obviously, he's been so important to this defense over the last couple of years. Can you be the same defense without Stephon Gilmore?
Yeah, I mean, Stephon, Gilly's still under contract. So he's a guy that, when he comes back in, he does what he does. And we all know that he's a guy. I think, for me, I've been talking to him. He's still a part of this team. And when he comes in, I don't think we have to change much. Like he fits in where he fits in. And it doesn't take, it doesn't take much to see where he fits in. I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel and see our defense is what it is year in and year out. Obviously we add new things. We do some things a little different depending on personnel and who's here. But what Gilly can do and what he brings to the table is still a huge part of the defense. And, when he gets back, that'll be what it is and all of that'll work itself out. But, obviously still fully part of his team. A lot of guys have talked to him this offseason and keep in contact with him. So, I think obviously it's my 12th year in the league. You see things like this happen. It kind of work itself out on its own and you kind of let the player worry about that. But I think as far as us as teammates and our defense with him in it, I'm excited for that just as much as anything. A guy that obviously his season got cut short last year and he's going to be working hard to get back and get to that level of play that he's been at the last couple of years. And I'm excited to see him do that. Obviously one of the hardest working guys I've been around, the quiet assassin, is doing what he needs to do to be back out there playing good football.
All right. Before we go spelunking on the Stephon Gilmore situation, you know what spelunking means, right, Phil?
Of course.
Okay. Are you a philatelist?
No, or nor a spelunker.
Do you know what a philatelist is?
I don't think it's appropriate for this podcast.
It's a stamp collector.
Oh,
my dad loved those stupid things. Before we spelunk too much, though, I think that Devin McCourty's input on Stephon Gilmore, who's holding out of this mini camp because of contractual strife, is interesting when he's speaking in very confident terms about Stephon Gilmore's return.
To me, he made it sound like it's more a question of when, not if, Stephon Gilmore will be back. And the reason I asked the question the way I did is because I do feel like he's so good and he allows them to do what Bill Belichick wants to do defensively, that if he's not here, you will have to change. I don't think you can be the man-to-man defense that you've been for the last 2 or 3 years, so heavily focused on that man style under Belichick without Stephon Gilmore and the way your cornerback group is constructed. I just don't think they can handle those kinds of responsibilities. You can if he's here. You can't if he's not. He's that important. And so I thought it was telling that somebody who is as close with Gilmore as he is, for McCourty to say, when he's back, he's going to do what he does, and we as a defense are going to do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Before we get too far into Steph, too, when Gilmore came here, the team was a zone team a little bit with Malcolm Butler as their lead corner. They still played a fair amount of zone. Sometimes Butler would get one-on-one coverage with different guys. But in the first days of Gilmore, before that Tampa Bay Thursday night game in 2017, they were mixing up their coverages, and they finally said, all right, we're all in on man again, which is what they did with Tlaib, which is what they were able to do with Revis, which is what they could do with Law, which is what they could do with Samuel. That period of time where guys like Lee Bodden were their lead corner was when they couldn't, and that's when their defense wasn't as good. The Patriots' defense is 25 to 30% better when they're able to have a shutdown corner chasing the best guy around the field and devoting two to somebody else. And it'd probably be even more significant without Patrick Chung, because now you're going to have Kyle Duggar and Jalen Mills and Adrian Phillips in addition to McCourty. Not that they can't get it, but the institutional knowledge, that hand and glove that was present with Harmon, Chung, McCourty, it's just not there yet, Phil. So all that said, this occurred to me. Does Bill, coming off a 7-9 season at the age of 69, knowing that he needs Stephon Gilmore, does he really need a major pissing contest over how much this kid's going to be paid? Does he even want it? This isn't Mankins and Will Fork and Branch.
Well, I don't think he should. And I think he knows to a certain extent that he doesn't have the leverage that he had in those situations. And I hate to boil it down to just having Tom Brady and not having Tom Brady, but when you had an all-time great quarterback, your margin for error was massive. And that's you could do without a star player at guard. You could do without a star player at corner if the case may be. And so you don't have that now. You're not good enough on your roster to be able to absorb those kinds of losses and just keep chugging along and win double-digit games. And so to do that, to get back to what the team was, what would we call it? I don't know. I was going to do a BCAD sort of joke with Tom Brady, but prior to Tom Brady's arrival, if you want to be in that, yeah, it's just too many letters, alphabet soup. Nobody likes that. You gotta be great. You kind of have to be great everywhere else, especially at corner, Tom, which is one of the most important positions in football.
And so I think you might not be putting up 28. You're right. You're not going to be putting up 27 a game just rolling out of bed.
You're not. You got to be great defensively. And to be great defensively, I think you need Stephon Gilmore or another number one corner. And I don't know where you're getting another one. So I think they're in a little bit of a tight spot, you know, because I understand from their perspective too, Tom. He's 30. What is he going to be? 31 years old?
He's 31. They haven't seen him show up and run around after his surgically repaired quad. So I don't blame them for, you know, not having antied up already for the guy. I don't. And I think that it's interesting because the tenor of Bill's commentary yesterday, citing the weather, I don't think he wants to ratchet it up.
And, I'd agree with that.
Other than the Gilmore's ridiculous cryptic social media tweets that go up and then come down and, you know, googly eyeballs to the side and whatever, just, you know, he hasn't really said anything. So just keep it above board, straighten it out, give him a bump, make sure he can run around, make sure the quad checks out, and get it done in probably guaranteed. Phil, how about this? If I had to set when he'll be in by, he won't miss more than a week of camp. He'll be in by the Wednesday following the opening.
I could see that. There's still plenty of time between now and then. I think where the impasse may be is because I think from Belichick's perspective, he would be wise to give him whatever bump he needs to play this year. But I think from Gilmore's perspective, he's probably going to want years as well. And that, I think, is where the problem is. I don't know if Bill Belichick's going to be willing to do that.
They have to do that. The Patriots do have to do that, though, because he's already making $16 million on the cap. So you almost have to add a year.
Well, you could give him incentives, right? You could give him not likely to be earned incentives. Say, you play 12 games, which you didn't do last year, if you get two picks, which you didn't do last year, you know, we're going to give you X millions of dollars, and you're going to be paid like a top five guy. I just think if you're Gilmore, you're probably looking at this and saying, hey, I appreciate it, but I'm looking to stay here the rest of my career and I'm going to need 3 years. I can't do the year to year thing anymore. It felt like that's what I was kind of on last year because we knew I was going to play for this contract in 2021, the way it's structured. And I don't want to put myself at risk again like that and maybe get injured and be looking at being done at 31 years old.
It's amazing. Xavien Howard, who signed in 2019, a 5-year, $75 million contract. And I tweeted this earlier. I don't feel like looking it up. He's due to make like $16 million this year or $12 million in salary. And he's holding out. So on one hand, I'm like, you know, Gilmore got a bump last year and he did agree for 5 years. And it's, you know, yes, he's underpaid relative to, but I have a hard time getting indignant about that relative lack of pay because he's averaged nearly $15 million over the life of the contract. Some guys come up at the right time and some guys don't. Anyway, Xavien Howard's holding out. What the hell is he thinking about?
And just signed, right? I mean, when just signed. Just, and I, so the if market they get changes, something done with I understand
him,
that.
If they get something done with him and he gets a bump, and I don't think he's even as good as Gilmore, for Christ's sake, is he? No.
I think there are different points in their career where Howard is still, I would say, firmly in his prime, where Gilmore is probably going the other direction. But I would still take Gilmore for this season. I would still take Gilmore over Howard. I would.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's all very interesting.
It's hard, though. It's hard. It's a massively important position. So I could see Gilmore saying good luck with JC and Jalen Mills. And I'll see you when you come through with that 4-year extension, Bill.
Want to hit one final item, and it's Dante Hightower. Dante Hightower has been here this week. He was here at the end of last week for OTAs. There's a lot of conversation after he opted out last year, whether or not he'd be back. He's played since he was 17 under Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. It's been a long run. He's made a lot of money. He's had a lot of success. So the question was not absurd to pose as to whether or not he would be back. Well, when we posed it to him on today's conference calls, he didn't want to hear that question.
The opt-out was for 2019, and that was 2019. All the rumors about retirement and stuff, y'all had me thinking somebody was trying to kick me out. But I mean, I did what I did for the betterment, what I thought was better for my family. And obviously I feel a little different in the situation I'm in now. But I mean, if I had to do it again, if I had to go back and do it, I would absolutely do it again.
Phil, here's the interesting thing about all of Hightower's answers. He never said, I'm 100% playing this year. Stop asking.
He said, I'm here.
What else do you want to say?
I'm here to work. I wouldn't do it for free. Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. I sort of read it as, can you guys stop bothering me? Like, the plan is to play.
And that's the way he wanted it to be read. But I did find it as if there was an aloofness towards saying that. No, maybe he just didn't want to placate the hungry, thirsty, irritating media, or maybe there was a reason for it. I guess, Phil, we'll find out. As with many things we will find out about later this week, we will have another podcast to put a lid on the 2021 Patriots minicamp and off-season workouts, and we will begin to turn our attention to the offseason. For Tom Karn and Phil Perry, goodbye. Say goodbye, Phil.